Hello, this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline. Are you jealous yet? The Triangle's coolest offices function not only as modern workspaces, but as competitive investments to attract both talent and customers. And that's the headline on the front page. There's a the story actually is inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline. Amazing spaces. Creative office environments fuel Triangle employers' competition for top talent. And this article is written by Amanda Hoyle. At the center of Morgan Creek Capital Management's headquarters in Chapel Hill, a tree and its canopy provide cover for an owl and two squirrels that have taken residence among its branches. While not a real tree, owl, or squirrel, they provide a conversation piece that has become part of the narrative of Morgan Creek Capital, an investment firm based in the Tony Meadow Mountain neighborhood. When founder Mark Yusko was envisioning the lodge-like office space with its plush furniture and stone fireplaces, he says he at first got some pushback from the architect and building designers. She said, "You can't do that because the outside of the building is all modern." But I told her that I don't live outside the building, I live inside. Yusko wanted the space to feel comfortable, a place where his staff of both baby boomers and millennials could gather and interact, something he says his team was not used to doing outside of a conference room. "For the first couple of months, I just about had to threaten people to get out of their office and go sit in these areas," he says. "Now we do it all the time." Wanted more engagement. In the intense competition to attract and retain top talent, Triangle employers are vying with one another to offer the more alluring perks for their workers, starting with a workplace that they hope can inspire ideas, improve performance, build retention, and grow the bottom line. A 2013 Gallup report on the state of the American workplace revealed that nearly 70% of all U.S. workers are either not engaged or actively disengaged with their company of employment, a distressing ratio that's been stagnant for more than a decade. The report shows that companies in North Carolina are no better, with only 30.2% of workers surveyed saying they are actively engaged where they work. While much of that problem, Gallup researchers surmise, can be blamed on leadership that is lacking good management skills, management experts say the right workplace can be a tool in helping shape or reshape a company's culture and flexibility. With that background in mind, Triangle Business Journal set out to talk to a few companies in the area and ask them about their office spaces. We chose small, medium, and large companies to get an understanding of whether the needs and effectiveness of modern office spaces change with size and industry segments. Small spaces. Chad Parker, managing director of Gensler's Design Office in Raleigh, who has worked on multiple major interior renovation projects across the Triangle, says a lot of times it's a matter of outthinking a solution versus outspending the problem. "Cool isn't cool if it doesn't solve their design problem," he says. At the new Better Homes and Garden Go Realty office in Midtown Raleigh, CEO Kevin Woody says they took suggestions from agent surveys at their other three offices before diving into the design of the new space. "They told us they liked the energy of the office, but they were missing having quieter space," he says. The result is an open reception area designed like a chic cafe, but with a furnished Zen den at the rear of the building for privacy and alone time. "I think we got this one right," Woody says. Medium spaces. Sometimes, once a company gets moved into a space, there are unexpected hiccups. When Capstrat expanded its space at its West Raleigh office building, employees and clients praised its design, showcasing video boards of the firm's creative work and the open staircase connecting the fourth floor to the third floor offices. The project also included a conference room with writable walls for 8 people next to the kitchen and break room, with the idea that it would make catering for meetings easier. "It is probably the least used because of the noise coming from the kitchen," admits Capstrat president and CEO Karen Albritton, "but otherwise the space is working well." They spent a lot of time, she says, testing the furniture and cubicle designs to make sure employees had adequate personal space, but with walls low enough they could still interact with coworkers. File drawers on wheels have cushions on top, serving a dual purpose as seating if team members want to visit. Conference rooms and alcoves are purposely arranged to encourage connectivity across the office. Lauren Stafford joined Capstrat as an account executive about a year ago, and she says there are some days she never makes it to her desk. I still need a place for my stuff, but sometimes I just like to work from the kitchen, she says. This blows away any other place I've ever worked before. Large spaces. No matter the size of the company or space, the cost of new construction, materials, and furniture is always a bottom-line factor that can determine which design amenities can stay and which will have to go. Typical construction costs can run as low as $30 per square foot or lower if a building space already has all the plumbing and electrical it needs. Or it can run as high as $100 per square foot or more for an owner who wants and can afford the more high-end finishes and furnishings. At MetLife in Cary, splurges were made to bring in larger-than-life statues of comic artist Charles Schulz's Peanut characters, which was key to the branding of the company among an employee base that is still relatively new to the company. At Parker Poe's new law office in downtown Raleigh, glass walls for each of the attorney's offices was a key part of the early design. But glass can be expensive, and the extra high product cost prompted the partners to cut back on the total amount of glass that was used in the final construction. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by managing editor Rebecca Troyer. The main headline, Duke student has a night to remember. Duke University senior Jay Ruckelshaus attended President Barack Obama's State of the Union address on January 12. Indiana Congresswoman Susan W. Brooks asked Indianapolis native Ruckelshaus to be her guest this year after he was awarded the Sagamore of the Wabash by Indiana Governor Mike Pence and the prestigious Rhodes Scholarship. The Sagamore of the Wabash is similar to the Order of the Long Leaf Pine Honor awarded in North Carolina. In 2011, shortly before entering Duke, Ruckelshaus was injured in a diving accident which left him paralyzed from the mid-chest down. He founded Rampless Traveled, a nonprofit organization helping others with spinal cord injuries pursue higher education. I'm incredibly excited to attend the State of the Union address and so grateful that Congresswoman Brooks thought to invite me, said Ruckelshaus. This has long been a basket list item of mine. I'm going to take full advantage of this chance to see so many public officials up close and to witness one of the touchstones of our democracy as I continue to contemplate my own path in public service. Stop Thief! Christensen's plea goes viral. The social media universe recently rallied around Raleigh restaurateur Ashley Christensen of AC Restaurants after a customized pig cooker was stolen from her facility. Photos were posted on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and several national dining and food blogs published Christensen's lament. Here's an excerpt. A call to all of my pals, please share. To the miserable pieces of... beep... who did thousands of dollars of damage breaking into our facility to steal one of the most special gifts that has ever been given to me. I dare you drive this cooker down the road or break it out at a party. This was a gift from one of my mentors, Nick Fahakis, in celebration of us winning the James Beard Award. The really sad thing? We mostly use this cooker to cook for charitable causes. Pals, please keep an eye out and help me take this message viral. And viral it went with at least 5,000 shares, Christensen tells Biz. It was pretty wild, says Christensen. The showing of community was amazing. There were no leads on the cooker's whereabouts as of TBJ's press deadline, and Christensen has turned the matter over to police and her insurance company. We hope it comes back, but meanwhile, we have a ton of stuff to do, she says. Cherry to design Annapolis Library. Lewis Cherry of Raleigh's Lewis Cherry Architecture has been selected as design architect for the new Annapolis Regional Library in Annapolis, Maryland. The 32,500-square-foot facility is estimated to cost $24.2 million. Cherry has a long history designing public libraries, including Cameron Village Library, Durham Southwest Regional Library, and Chatham Community Library. We have promised the Annapolis community a state-of-the-art library, and this team will deliver on that promise, says Ann Arundel, County Executive Steve Shaw. Cherry has practiced architecture in North Carolina since 1983. He has served on the Board of Trustees for the North Carolina Museum of Art and the Contemporary Art Museum of Raleigh, and has taught studio and professional practice classes at the NC State University College of Design. Lincoln Center exec coming to Raleigh. Jed Bernstein, president of the Lincoln Center for the Performing Arts in New York City, will be stopping by Raleigh on January 25 to discuss the responsibility of art institutions in the creative arena, thanks to a professor at William Peace University. Amy White, assistant professor of theater and musical theater at the school, was a student of Bernstein's at Savannah College of Art and Design when he was still a Broadway producer. He ultimately became White's professional mentor and later, at her request, agreed to speak to her students at WPU and the community at large. WPU is co-presenting Bernstein's lecture and Q&A session, along with Raleigh's Burning Coal Theater, which is hosting the event in its performance hall. UNC students' big surprise, Forbes 30 Under 30 list. Magda Gokal, a PhD candidate at UNC Chapel Hill, was traveling when she learned she was named to the Forbes 2016 30 Under 30 list. Her reaction was a mixture of shock and delight. She immediately told her husband. He was shocked too, says Gokal, who placed in the healthcare category. Using big data, Gokal's doctoral work analyzes health databases to see if medicines used by thousands of patients are as safe and effective as touted. As an example, there was a growing concern in healthcare circles of a correlated risk between some diabetes medications and pancreatic cancer. However, those conclusions came from less rigorous studies. Through her research, Gokal found no such correlated risk, an important finding for doctors and patients taking diabetes medicines. Shruti Shah, a UNC graduate and co-founder of tech startup Move Loot, found out she'd made the list through a Google alert that she set up for her company. It was a very tech way to find out, she admits. She immediately emailed the other three co-founders, who all placed in the retail and e-commerce category. It's a huge honor, she says. You're among so many talented people. Move Loot, now based in Silicon Valley but with a significant presence in the Triangle, is an online marketplace for buying and selling furniture. The company has been described as Craigslist meets Uber for furniture. The group has raised $20 million from outside investors and now employs 100 people around the United States, mostly workers who drive the box trucks and warehouse the furniture. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page written by Amanda Hoyle. The main headline, Morrisville's Park West Village preps for new stores, mixed-use component. Casto, the developer of the Park West Village Retail Power Center in Morrisville, is prepping for the opening of the district in spring. The mixed-use Main Street area of Park West that will be the new focal point of the 100-acre development. The four-story buildings of the district are adding another 40,000 square feet of street-level retail space to the existing 580,000 square foot retail center. The project also includes 118 apartment units atop the retail called the District Lofts, which will occupy the top three floors of the buildings. At least two retail leases have already been signed, including the Ann Taylor Loft store that will be relocating from Kerrytown Center Mall after it closes in January. The Fleet Feet Athletic Shoe Store that's in another part of Park West Village will also be relocating to a space in the district. Elsewhere at Park West Village, the Triangle's first location for Chicken Salad Chick will be opening next to Wine Store. Chicken Salad Chick is an Alabama-based chain that's been expanding across the Southeast with a menu of about 15 different chicken salad concoctions. Upward trend for median home prices. December home sales in the Triangle recovered nicely from a relatively slow November sales month, with enough volume to push the 2015 year-end total sales up 9.2% over last year, according to a report from Triangle Multiple Listing Service. But growth in the area's median home price is the better statistic to use if trying to determine if home values are going up and whether your home is worth more than when you bought it. Here's the next section is called You Said It. Reaction to news on Facebook that Macy's Loft and Express will be closing their stores at Kerrytown Center Mall by spring 2016. Tara Alicia Williams says, "This mall is sad for an area that tries to be savvy. Get fashion forward, Kerry. Bring in Barney's or Neiman Marcus." Kathy Taylor Mureshi says, "A complete makeover is needed in line of what North Hills has accomplished." And finally, in the school construction, a look at the middle school of the future. The Wake County Public School System has broken ground on the new River Bend Middle School campus in Northeast Raleigh that school officials say will be a prototype for future school projects. The three-story, 195,400-square-foot school building will be able to accommodate about 1,280 students, according to its designers with the Perkins and Will architecture firm, and the prototype can be modified for a variety of sites. The design is essentially a classic courtyard school where both classrooms and shared functions are able to visually connect with the outdoors while creating a sense of community, says Perkins and Will architect Marco Nicotera. The design for Riverbend Middle School will include 81 instructional classrooms, a theater, performance game, career tech suite, and administrative spaces. The project will cost the school district about $42 million to build. And now turning to On Pharmaceuticals, written by Jason DeBruin, the main headline, pediatric-focused CRO launched in Durham. Tucked away in a Durham office building off Lee Farm Road, Barry Mangum and Betsy Reed want to transform new drug research in children. By and large, the pharmaceutical and biotechnology industry test experimental new treatments in adults and then simply reduce the dose when seeking pediatric equivalents, says Mangum. Basically, clinicians have been guessing at the right dose and dose interval when it comes to children, he says. Padian, which is Greek for little child and currently has 5 employees, could become the go-to for trials involving children. So, after a career that started in neonatal medicine in 1978 and includes 23 patent awards, Mangum founded Padian Research with Reed as a company that runs clinical trials only in children. Large CROs have pediatric units, of course, but Padian could very well be the only company in existence that focuses solely on pediatric trials. "We are the only pediatric clinic research organization in the United States," says Mangum. "We only execute pediatric research. We do no adult trials." In the drug development world, drug companies contract with research organizations called CROs, which stand for contract or clinical research organizations. These CROs then run expensive trials, testing the investigational new drug in human patients. Mangum says that these trials too often focus on adults because the potential market is so much larger, leaving pediatric testing almost as an afterthought. "We believe in taking care of the smallest and most vulnerable population by providing a dedicated team to perform pediatric clinical research," Mangum says. Of course, there is a business benefit as well. In 2012, Congress passed the Food and Drug Administration Safety and Innovation Act, FDASIA, which, among other provisions, directed FDA to take specific actions to further the development of new therapies for children affected by rare diseases. There are unique challenges when developing drugs, biological products, and medical devices for the pediatric population, according to FDA. Not only is there the potential for children to respond differently to products as they grow, but there are also additional ethical concerns for this patient population. Because Padion was able to sign some deals early, the company didn't need to take on investors, though Mangum says we would welcome funding if it came along. Sempra raises $94 million in revised public offering. Chapel Hill drug developer Sempra completed a public offering, selling 4.2 million shares for $24, raising $94 million after expenses. Underwriters have a 30-day option for an additional $625,000, which could bring Sempra another $14 million if exercised in full. The additional shares will dilute existing shareholders by about 10%. Sempra shares closed January 13 at $19.13, after trading as high as $31 in December and $45 in July. The amount raised in the public offering represents about half the amount Sempra initially looked to raise. The company, led by Prabhavathi Fernandez, filed a new drug application with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to market its lead experimental drug, solithromycin, for the treatment of community-acquired bacterial pneumonia, CABP. It will use proceeds from the public offering to ramp up a commercial launch of the drug. In the pharmaceutical industry, simply receiving approval for a new drug does not guarantee commercial success. Drug developers still need to convince doctors that their new drug works better than existing treatments in order for them to prescribe it. In addition, drug companies must convince payers, such as health insurance companies and pharmacy benefit managers, of the new drug's health benefit, so the payers tier the new drug in a good copay category. After all, a drug might work wonders, but if patients must pay too much out of pocket for the product, sales can languish. And in the research corner, three Duke University professors, including two from the Sanford School of Public Policy, placed on Education Week's 2016 list of influential researchers. The Duke professors were Helen Ladd and Charles Klotfelter of the Sanford School, and Peter Arcidiacono, a professor of economics. Education Week ranks professors on 8 metrics, including items like Amazon ranking, newspaper mentions, and Twitter clout points. The highest score of 180 was achieved by Linda Darling Hammond of Stanford. Duke scores: Ladd ranked 45th with a score of 75.8. Klotfelter ranked 89th with a score of 58.4. Arcidiacono tied for 165th with a score of 34.9. Two local operations impacted by outside moves. San Diego-based life sciences company Sequenome announced it would divest various assets, including its North Carolina operations. Company-wide, Sequenome will reduce its workforce by 20%, or about 110 workers, including the 60 that work in RTP. Company executives hold out hope that they can sell the RTP unit to a company that will retain the workforce. German company Fresenius KB USA acquired a Wilson Pharmaceutical manufacturing plant and its 100 employees from Becton, Dickinson and Company. The acquisition is part of a larger deal in which Fresenius KB acquired the BDRX business. And under big numbers, $3 million. The amount raised by Chapel Hill-based drug developer Vascular Pharmaceuticals. The additional funds will allow it to increase the size of a clinical trial to test its experimental treatment for diabetic nephropathy, the leading cause of chronic kidney disease. Now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Technology page, written by Lauren Onasorge. First section it starts off with is Entrepreneurs. 5 questions with Shark Tank fashion startup. A Raleigh fashion startup that scored big on ABC's Shark Tank last year is still growing. That's according to co-founder Sharon Bew, who, along with her co-founder, Kate Stedman, appeared on the show last March, making a $100,000 30% equity deal with Shark's Barbara Cochran and Kevin O'Leary for Frill Clothing, a fashion startup targeting the sorority market. But Bui, an NC State University graduate, and Stedman, an Appalachian State University grad, founded the fashion company while they were 19-year-old students. By the time they appeared on Shark Tank 4 years later, they had done $400,000 in sales. Bui tells us the past year has meant a 50% uptick in sales. Other than financially, how has Shark Tank boosted Frill? Shark Tank gave us credibility in the textile industry. Since we are young entrepreneurs, we used to have a lot of trouble gaining respect in the industry. It opened doors to partnerships that would have otherwise not been options. We also gained a lot of traction on our website when we aired and when we re-aired. We now have a lot of sororities across the nation that know about us. How involved has Shark Tank been in the business over the past year? The Sharks are very involved in our long-term growth strategy. We speak to them almost every other week. They are always there for us whenever we need them, ready to answer our questions. What lessons did you learn from your Shark Tank experience? It is important to know your worth and to stay true to your customer base and to expand vertically and not horizontally. When going in the Shark Tank, you should go in knowing exactly what you want and making sure you come out of the tank with what you want. And in a section called He Said It, the quote, "We look for markets that have enough demand to fill at least a 150-seat airplane 3 times a week. We look at the level of service at the market today, and we look at the price being charged." And that's from Daniel Schurz, Chief Commercial Officer of Frontier Airlines, shortly after announcing 3 new nonstop services out of Raleigh-Durham International Airport, Orlando, Atlanta, and Philadelphia, bringing its total RDU routes to 7. Fast 50 winner sold to Texas firm. Fresh off the announcement that Texas-based private equity firm Greenridge Investment Partners is acquiring his company for an undisclosed sum, Steve Norwood, co-founder of Raleigh-based Consolidated Asset Recovery Systems, says to expect a growth strategy shift. CARS, dubbed the fastest-growing triangle firm at the 2015 Fast 50 Awards, gets the benefit of Greenridge's wallet, and that means the next time it has an acquisition, it could be CARS doing the buying, he says. Greenridge has got a lot of money behind them, he says. If we wanted to go out and merge or acquire or do something strategic, we can. We couldn't do that before. Expect CARS, which makes its business helping banks and subprime lenders recoup their losses from loans on cars, trucks, and other leisure items, to start exploring buy opportunities in mid-2016, he says. Cars' own buyout, more than a year in the making, was prompted by 2 things, the first being pressure from its 2 angel investors. Norwood, who bootstrapped the firm personally from 2005 to 2008, took on Wilmington Investor Network and Springboard Capital as investment partners more than 7 years ago. Shortly after taking the cash, CARS found profitability, he says. While the company didn't need institutional capital to sustain its current trajectory, it was getting to the point where it needed bigger, more strategic partners, he says. And as a typical angel investor wants a return on three to five years, those players were hungry for an exit. Greenridge's buy, terms were not disclosed, doesn't mean a lot will change, he says, at least not immediately. The company is still planning to hire 10 more employees on top of the 62 it already has in 2016. The company is budgeted to grow 30% this year, and opportunities abound, he says. We're still just doing less than 10% of the overall opportunity in the market, he says. There's a lot of upside growth opportunity. Epic Games apologizes to rejected player. Sure, carry video game company Epic Games apologized for a filter that rejected a man based on his name while he was trying to register to play a video game. But that man, Broward College professor Muhammad Zakir Khan, says that's not good enough. Tim Sweeney, CEO of Epic, tried to solve the problem, tweeting after Khan complained that a broad filter related to U.S. trade restrictions was the culprit in the incident. The carry company has fixed the issue, he says. But Khan said via email after the fact that while Epic Games, quote, did a good job of taking ownership of the problem, unquote, he does have lingering concerns. I would have hoped someone at Epic Games would have considered the ramifications of what they were doing as they were conducting the programming for the way the system was set up, he said. I think that they perhaps did not consider the detrimental outcomes because of a lack of diversity and or critical thinking. Reflecting upon this incident, I want to make sure that there are proper checks not only in Epic, but in other companies to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again. He's also concerned about the nexus of gaming companies like Epic and the federal government. I think it's important for these companies to be transparent about how they are working with the government, he wrote. Epic Games referred to Sweeney's tweets as its comment in response to the incident. And finally, in a section called Timeline, a year of new flight announcements at RDU. February 2015, Southwest Airlines announces it's bringing nonstop service to Dallas Love Field. Allegiant Airlines announces three Florida destinations from RDU. Frontier Airlines announces seasonal service to Denver and Chicago. April 2015, Alaska Airlines announces RDU to Seattle service. May 2015, United Airlines announces two daily nonstop flights to Denver. August 2015, Delta announces it's bringing back Salt Lake City route in 2016. And September 2015, Delta announces it's bringing service to Paris in 2016. January 2016, Frontier announces flights to Orlando, Atlanta, and Philadelphia. And in general news, General Electric confirms Raleigh was on its HQ list. Hours after General Electric announced it would be moving its headquarters to Boston, the corporate Goliath confirmed the pick could have been Raleigh. The company, according to a statement released January 13, began with a list of 40 potential locations in June. After months of rumors that GE had been considering a North Carolina location, GE confirmed January 13 that Raleigh was, in fact, on that list. Boston was selected after a careful evaluation of the business ecosystem, talent, long-term costs, quality of life for employees, connections with the world, and proximity to other important company assets. Raleigh and the Triangle in general meet many of those qualifications. In winning the headquarters over places such as New York, Atlanta, and Raleigh, Boston wins more than the 800 employees GE has pledged to bring to the city. It gets a new startup innovation center and the prestige of counting another global giant among its ranks, all things the state of North Carolina, too, would covet. While officials at the North Carolina Commerce Department aren't commenting on the news, local executives tasked with helping to revamp Research Triangle Park say they're taking steps to hook the next corporate headquarters. Smedes York, York Properties developer and chairman of the Research Triangle Foundation, says the RTF team is already well on its way to attracting the next GE. The things we are doing are exactly what we need to do, he says, pointing to the Park Center project, a tract of land RTP is revamping near I-40. For the first time, retail, residential, and restaurant elements will coexist alongside companies. That's what a lot of folks are looking for, a lot more urban character. Fellow board member and chairman of RTF's development committee, Bob Winston, CEO of Winston Hospitality, says the Triangle will soon have a shot at every single GE-like project looking for a home. Our goal is to make sure that there's no question that they're going to look at the park and Park Center specifically, he says. York says an announcement about a new tenant at Park Center could happen quickly, although he doesn't offer any specific time frame or details regarding the company itself. There are companies that are making decisions now, he says. We do have at least one or two pretty strong suspects. A little more than suspects, I'd call them prospects. GE has not been specific about where in the Raleigh area it had considered for its relocation. And now we turn to the small business section of Triangle Business Journal, and we'll read the column written by David Brown, who is the chairman, CEO, and president of Web.com. The headline, Five Marketing Trends for Small Businesses in 2016. As the new year begins, you want to make sure your small business starts it off on a high note. One way to do that is to take advantage of some of the top marketing trends for 2016. Considering all the ways a business can connect with its audience, there are five distinct trends that will become realities in the coming year. These trends are opportunities that brands should be aware of and consider. Keep them in mind as you consider budgets, strategy, and other decisions. Expanded search options. Search engines aren't the only way to find information anymore. Social media has become an integral part of searches. Facebook, Pinterest, and Twitter all have options for users to search the broader internet while staying on their designated pages. For small businesses, this means your customer reviews on social platforms will show up in search results more often. Consider investing more time in monitoring your social presence and responding within a timely manner. Watch the popular networks like Facebook, Twitter, Google, Yelp, and LinkedIn to monitor what your consumers have to say about your business. Mobile payment growth. As Apple Pay and other payment systems grow and more financial institutions accommodate mobile payment systems, ensure your mobile website is adaptable. Almost 60% of consumers use their smartphone to make payments because they will receive a reward or some kind of incentive for use. Even if your budget is limited, start looking into different mobile payment platforms for the future. It is crucial that you are aware of your options. If customers can buy your products or services online, check to see if your site has a mobile version that allows them to complete their transactions via their mobile device. Video popularity will skyrocket. According to the 2015 Cisco Visual Networking Index white paper, video will account for 80% of global internet traffic by 2019. To help the success of your website, share and host videos on your website to attract viewers and to create awareness for your brand. Video is extremely versatile, so create a variety of different videos to showcase your product or service. Share the behind-the-scenes insights and more. The possibilities with video are endless, so consider all your options. If your business doesn't have a lot of visual promotion pieces, get creative. Give customers an inside look at what your company does and what you are doing to put their needs first. Prioritizing the customer experience. Businesses should expect to respond to questions or concerns within a couple of hours. Faster response times and regular site monitoring have become essential to keep customers in the know and happy. Customer experience isn't just segmented to personal and online interactions. Make sure that the customer's experience both online and in-store is positive. Your website should have a professional, clean look that matches the personality of your store, products, or services. Keep your website current. Use clear, small pixel images. Make it easy to use and ensure that the site is optimized for mobile. Strengthened ad blocking software. Ad blocking software is now commonplace and can hurt the sales of big and small businesses. Research conducted by Adobe and PageFair shows that ad blocking software cost about $22 billion in lost revenue. About 48% of people in the U.S. are using an ad blocker. Ad blockers not only hinder your potential sales, but also skew data when comparing ad performance metrics. Ads play a critical role in generating awareness for your business, especially through social media. Don't stand idle. Study your options in 2016 and plan accordingly. Consider ways to incorporate these trends into your 2016 budget and overall strategy. Keep yourself up to date during the rest of 2016. Track your results and encourage adaptability, as nimbleness is a rare, vital commodity. And the small business profile is on ClinTrax Global. ClinTrax Global handles the business side of clinical trial management. And this article is written by Jason DeBruin. Over lunch one day in 2012, Brandon Evans, Elizabeth Easley, and Stephen Jones hatched an idea. Just a few years later, that idea is a company that has already worked on some 250 drug trials in 65 countries. The team formed ClinTrax Global in early 2013, and while their entire business model surrounds the testing of new drugs, ClinTrax doesn't actually deal in drug research and development the way many Triangle Life Sciences companies do. Instead, they work solely on the business end of clinical trials, helping drug companies in areas like contract negotiations, budget development, site payment, and resource placement to make sure those clinical trials run without a hitch. The ClinTrax founders work together closely in the business office of PRA Health Sciences, a global contract research organization. In some ways, there is irony that ClinTrax was founded on the principle of outsourcing a small portion of a clinical trial. After all, the entire CRO industry came to life on the idea that drug companies should outsource clinical trials. In order to apply to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration or similar regulatory bodies around the world, pharmaceutical and medical device companies must run expansive trials on experimental new treatments to prove they are safe and effective for broader use. While CROs are good at the clinical aspect of a trial, they aren't as efficient at running some of the contract negotiations or budget management aspects of a trial. To run a clinical trial, the pharmaceutical company, called a sponsor in the industry, contracts with health centers around the world to recruit a targeted patient population in which to test a new therapy. This requires contract negotiations, budget management, and payments to the health system. Sponsors can outsource this work to a CRO, and companies like Quintiles, PPD, Parexel, and others have grown into this multi-billion dollar industry. However, the industry focused so heavily on the clinical aspect of running a trial that it didn't perform so well on the financial aspects. Recognizing this from their days at PRA, Evans, Easley, and Jones founded ClinTrax with the purpose of carving out that niche. It really becomes a bottleneck to get the trial up and running, says Evans. It's a pain point for CROs. ClinTrax works to gain an understanding of laws in other countries that could affect a trial. It staffs people who speak the local languages to improve contract negotiations. It researches how best to make payments to health centers and manages the payment cycle. We developed a way of doing contracts that we thought was pretty innovative, says Jones. ClinTrax has not taken any outside investment, and the founders say they are proudly bootstrapped. It helped that they signed on a big, undisclosed contract in the first days as a company. It has now grown to 29 full-time workers in the United States, another 10 around the world, and about 50 part-time workers. The company closed 2015 with $7 million in revenue, an increase of 1,800% from 2013. It will likely rank on the 2016 Inc. 5000 list, and the founders see nothing but growth ahead. It's been a fun 3 years, says Easley. And now we turn to the People on the Move page in the Triangle Business Journal. The spotlight is on Reuben Chandler, Director of Construction Services at Mulkey Engineers and Consultants. After 32 years in public service with the North Carolina Department of Transportation, Reuben Chandler says he was finally ready to retire, but the opportunity to lead the construction division at Mulkey Engineers and Consultants was too good to pass up. "I had to take it," he says. Now, as Director of Construction Services, Chandler is responsible for managing and marketing the firm's construction services program, which includes construction, engineering, and inspection. Raleigh-based Mulkey is a mid-sized, woman-owned, multidisciplined civil and environmental engineering firm helmed by President and CEO Jill Wells Heath. The firm currently employs 137 in total, 73 of whom are located in the Triangle. What's one thing you wish people knew about your job? That Mulkey's Construction Services Group is going strong and growing. I'm so impressed with the level of talent Mulkey has amassed. What are some of your major goals for your new position? To grow the CEI program within the firm and to provide the highest quality technicians. Biggest pet peeve? slow drivers driving in the left-hand lanes, especially if they're talking on their cell phones. Biggest worry? Excelling in the private sector after such a long career in the public sector. Triangle business person you most admire? Jill Wells Heath. She is the chair of the Raleigh Chamber Board of Directors, serves on numerous other boards, and runs the company. I don't know how she does it. Education, bachelor's degree in civil engineering from NC State University. Personal, wife Renee, two sons, Brian and Cameron. Last book you've read, The Book of Psalms in the Bible. And now we turn to the viewpoint page and we read the editor's notebook written by Sugata Mukherjee, who is editor of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Good Year for VCs Bodes Well for Entrepreneurs. Just a few days ago, we read that one of the Triangle's fastest-growing private companies, Consolidated Asset Recovery Systems, was sold to a private equity group that wants to accelerate the company's services across additional platforms and industries. This modern-day high-tech repo agent that works with financial institutions has been doubling its revenue in recent years, especially following the economic meltdown some 8 years ago. With about 60 workers on board, it is hard to imagine that the company has more than $50 million in annual revenue. CARS, or C-A-R-S, did not disclose its sales when announcing the buyout. What surprises me about this deal is the fact that private equity players are now looking at deals that generate moderate sales but with a solid cash flow. Does that mean M&A opportunities in the mid-market level are disappearing? Actually, far from it. People who play in the M&A sandbox say $50 million buyout deals will increase as valuations are lowered and capital gets expensive for smaller companies. Cash flow was always important. Now it has become uber important. So where does that leave the entrepreneurial community in 2016? For North Carolina entrepreneurs, fundraising numbers show that 2015 was a banner year. Venture capital firms and mezzanine players completed more than 80 deals last year, pouring some $900 million collectively in technology, life sciences, and other business service entities. A big caveat remains the valuation game. VCs are asking for more ownership and control, and entrepreneurs are relenting to that pressure. But that's not necessarily a bad thing, because these things happen in cycles, and venture capitalists are very intent on diversifying their investments. A newly released report from Cambridge Associates shows that since 2000, more than 60% of the industry returns for venture fund managers came from deals outside the top 10 largest returns. That means VCs are finding more deals that are returning multiple times their investment. Even better, the Cambridge report notes, non-traditional venture markets are slowly gaining ground over the VC powerhouse markets, such as Silicon Valley, Boston, and New York. They are still the largest markets, but the share is eroding. That's good news for us. For venture capitalists, the strategy to have geographic diversity is working. For the first 6 months of 2015, VC returns were some 11%, private equity was 6.5%, and the NASDAQ composite was 5.3%. Let's see if we can maintain this momentum in 2016. And also on the Viewpoint page, there's a column written by Tim Giuliani, who is the CEO of the Greater Raleigh Chamber of Commerce. The headline, What I Learned from My First 200 Days. Like Johnny Cash, I've been everywhere, man. In just my first few months as the president and CEO of the Greater Raleigh Chamber of Commerce, I've circled the triangle to meet and see leaders and places so I can become grounded in what makes this region special. I clearly recognize why so many publications and companies put this market at the top of their list. My immediate priority was to take in as much as I could and examine our organization, as well as our region, with fresh eyes, a new, unbiased point of view with no preconceived ideas. What I discovered was interesting and exciting. Sincere collaboration. I've met local entrepreneurs along with longtime pillars of the Triangle, and this always rings true. There is a sincere spirit of collaboration and dedication to the greater good of our community. I'll have no problem selling Raleigh and the Triangle. I also feel the responsibility to carry on the tradition of partnership and acting on what's best for the long-term prosperity of the market and our quality of life, just like the leaders who have come before me. Managing growth. The data is very clear, and most people I talk to have heard it before. Over the next 15 years, demographers predict Wake County alone will add 300,000 more residents. In order to keep our unemployment rate where it is today, we'll have to create 155,000 new jobs in that same time period. Going forward, we must plan for our growth. We'll have to make investments in infrastructure to ensure our quality of life is still what we've come to enjoy. I haven't met anyone yet who would rather sit in traffic than attend their child's Little League game, ballet recital, or soccer practice. This summer, I arrived in Raleigh to witness the culmination of both sides of the political aisle coming together to develop a plan to create our best future. Today, the Wake County Transit Plan is open for public input with endorsement from a broad-based bipartisan advisory committee. Capitalizing on our strengths. When a publication or study ranks the Triangle area as one of the best in the country, no application was submitted or pitch made to receive that acknowledgement. To determine our number 2 city for business and careers accolade, Forbes considered 12 metrics that included job growth, business and living costs, and educational attainment, as well as factors such as cultural and recreational opportunities. The findings announced by Forbes, Wallet Hub, Money Magazine, and many others are factual. In order to maintain this momentum, we must stay vigilant about our value proposition as a market. Having the best talent pool in the U.S. for a diversified innovation economy should top our list of priorities. This means pre-kindergarten, world-class schools, and universities. This means supporting Wake Technical Community College and all of the training opportunities our community needs to stay globally competitive. Drive and ambition. My laps around the Triangle have taught me that we find ourselves in this enviable community position because of the great teachers in our schools, risk-taking entrepreneurs, and informed, grounded, yet visionary civic leaders. We shouldn't take this for granted in a global marketplace. These talented people can practice their craft almost anywhere. Our challenge is to inspire this region to act on this vision. I'm proud to serve with Greater Raleigh Chamber leadership and staff who are committed to the prosperity of our region. As the largest business organization in the Triangle, we have assembled an inclusive group of business leaders to take a hard look at ourselves to ensure we are built for the challenges and opportunities before us. We've already doubled the capacity in our leadership programs because if one thing is clear, it's that effective leadership is at the root of great schools, companies, and communities. And after all, we are the City of Oaks. And with our remaining minutes, we'll read from the small business section of the previous issue of the Triangle Business Journal. This is the family business column written by James Leah, who is a professor at UNC Chapel Hill and a family business speaker. The headline, Making and Keeping Resolutions for the New Year. A problem that crops up every December is one I call resolution overload. It results from family businesses cranking out a new batch of New Year's resolutions before last year's resolutions have been implemented or written off. Last week, I helped my friend Wally review his company's 2015 New Year's resolutions so he and his family could work on their business improvement aspirations for 2016. Okay, I said, what about this one? We resolved to cut management costs by reducing perquisites of family members not employed in this business or, for that matter, anywhere else. Did you carry out that one? Not quite, Wally said. We came close to getting the company cars back from my nephews who are in college, but my sister raised such a stink that we just let it go another year. Isn't that costing the company a lot for insurance, to say nothing of the cost of purchasing and maintaining the cars? Sure, he said, but cutting those kids off would cause a lot of bad feelings in the family. I'd rather see the business take the heat than take it myself. So we'll write that one off, I said. How about number five here? We resolved to improve communication about and participation in family business matters by forming a family council and holding quarterly meetings. That's good. Is the council going well? It probably would have, Wally replied, if we had more than one meeting. I got the family together in January to organize the council, but we couldn't seem to agree on a purpose or procedures or even who should be on it. Everyone was so concerned about protecting turf that we never got around to discussing the business's needs. I gave up. That's when you should have brought in a consultant, Wally, I said. Sometimes it takes a specialist without a personal agenda to help the family focus on common interests instead of individual ones. I guess you're right, he said. Anyway, the family council and resolution number five never came to much. Let's write it off. He drew a thick black line across the page. Maybe there's a more positive way of doing this, I suggested. Which 2015 resolutions did your business actually put into practice? We did a pretty good job with number seven, the one about writing a succession plan and disengagement plan, he said. My brother, my sister, and I had a meeting and agreed that the business really ought to have those plans. I waited expectantly. That's all? I asked. Hey, Wally said indignantly. Big changes take time. I mean, we'd thought about planning before, but this year we really agreed to do some of it. Tell you what, maybe we can make a resolution for 2016 about actually starting the plans. You know, Wally, the word resolution has a pretty important meaning for a family-owned business. A resolution is a statement of firm intention, a commitment to act, to do things differently and better. A family business's New Year's resolution, or a resolution made any time of year, is a promise that the business and the family make to themselves. Resolution making gives you a chance to review the family's vision for the business, what it ought to be in the future, and to set some specific objectives, call them resolutions, for moving it in that direction during the upcoming year. Yeah, we should get serious about our resolutions, Wally said. What about this? We resolve to resolve more seriously and to stick with what we resolve in 2016. Well, I told myself it's a start. Happy New Year, Wally, I said. And we're going to stop there as we've run out of time for this episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. The program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. You can contact us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.